and welcome to the Heroine TV Podcast. Today is Tuesday, May 28th. Of course, by the time you're listening to this, it'll be at least a day after that. And we're doing another movie edition of the podcast. I've got Kyle and Colin back. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
And I'm very excited. Last time we podcast was back probably in, was it in February or January? It was
something.
Back before the Oscars. And we did like a double edition, part one and two movie podcast, and we're finally doing another one. So I'm so excited to have you back. Yay.
I'm excited to be back too.
Yes. And so we were going to talk about The Great Gatsby, the recent adaptation, and then also the new Star Trek movie, Into Darkness, and also Star Trek III, The Wrath of Khan, because it has obvious connections. And
oh, that was a faux pas, Lucia.
What? I'm going to put a spoiler warning.
No, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Are you sure?
Did you ask me if I'm sure?
Oh, well, okay.
Colin, want to back me up on
this
one?
Gosh, I'm already getting in trouble. I'm such a bad Trekkie. I'm in such big trouble. Okay. So Star Trek II. Oh, well, you know, now it all makes sense. Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, Star Trek Redux II, copying everything Wrath of Khan did, but not as good.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't going for subtlety there. I mean,
no.
Now, I see a pattern now. It's all becoming clear. So we're going to get into it. I'm a Star Trek sort of, you know, obviously I know nothing, but now I'm learning. But first we're going to talk about Great Gatsby, because really what goes together with Star Trek more than The Great Gatsby? I can't think of anything.
Sure. Yeah.
What did you guys think of Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby?
Colin, do you want to start off on this one, or?
I thought it was good, not great, certainly not great.
Mm-hmm.
But there were things I liked. The acting, I mean, certain scenes I thought were done particularly well. And Kyle, and you and I have discussed this, but I think my favorite scene in the movie has to be the hotel scene.
Yeah.
Oh, really? The hotel scene, but it was so uncomfortable. I think. Oh, okay. Well, go on. Tell
well,
me why.
That's what's great about it. But yeah.
Well, because of
what
the uncomfortableness.
Is great about it is that it's you know, it's stripped of everything else.
So
you're just
setting.
Stuck in a hotel room, and there's nothing there except five characters who are all very uncomfortable being around each other.
Yeah, I was like, my skin was crawling. I was so upset. By that point in the movie, I was so invested in poor, sad Leo, which normally I'm not a big Leonardo DiCaprio fan, but God, he was breaking my heart in this movie. I was just like, oh, Daisy, why you have to do him like that? So cruel.
But again, well, yeah, I think that's something that worked really well in the hotel scene, is that you've come to like him so much, and you've come to really want him to succeed and, you know, to win, and then all of a sudden he's snapping and he sounds like a crazy person and he gets really violent.
Yeah, he's so desperate in that moment. It's so sad. Like, you can, yeah, I mean, even without her reaction, you can tell just by the way he's acting that he's just, he kind of, part of him knows he's lost her at that moment.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Well, I know Colin and I, we had talked about this before the movie. And I was sort of going off this you know, Leo, you know, vibe here. I was sort of worried from the get-go, well, about a lot of things with this movie.
Right.
Leonardo DiCaprio being one of them. Generally, I do like him. I think he really, over the past, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, has become a much, much better actor than he used to be. So, you know, which is a good thing. But then, you know, I was thinking about Gatsby and what the character of Gatsby is all about, and I mean, Gatsby is really, I mean, for people who haven't read it or whatever, Gatsby is really like quite a vulnerable character, and mm-hmm. I don't know how well Leonardo DiCaprio does vulnerable, because I've never really seen that from him much.
Well, part of it is that for the past like 15 years, it's like he has been playing assholes. Like, he has been playing the most unlikable characters lately. Like, don't you think?
I mean, definitely.
And this is the first character in years where
I
liked him.
I think he managed it really well in this movie. I was very impressed by his, like, vulnerable Gatsby.
Mm-hmm. It was like back to those What's Eating Gilbert Grape days. Back when he was a sweetheart.
Yeah. I don't know what happened.
Slightly unhinged, sweetheart.
Yeah.
You guys are both impressed with Leo, that he was so vulnerable in the moment. What about the way, to specifically go with him before we get into the rest, the way that they introduced Gatsby? Was very melodramatic, you know. There's such a buildup throughout the film before you even meet him. What? Gatsby? Who? You know, and there's all this whispering, and then we finally see him. What did you think of the way in which his character was introduced and the trappings of his mystery?
Well, I was glad that that's what they did, because that's really how it is in the book, too. Like, he's very... You don't know anything about him, really, and Nick talks a lot about this guy who lives next to him and sort of how he was introduced to him. And, I mean, it really follows it almost like word for word, sort of scene by scene for a while. Mm-hmm. And so I thought they did a great job of that in the movie. And I really liked that, like, Gatsby reveal scene with that, like, smile and, like, the fireworks. I thought that was very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
I was quite amused by that.
Especially the musical cue, right when he turns around, Rhapsody in Blue hits at like full force, and it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was very amusing.
And that brings to mind, since you mentioned the musical cue, you know, they very specifically decided to use modern music as the score for this film, even though the costuming and the sets are set in the 20s. They used modern music. What did you think of that choice of the music? Because I heard some people complaining in my theater after.
Well, I don't know what they were expecting if they knew who the director was. I mean, that's sort of a hallmark of what he does. And I thought it worked really well. I mean, I thought it added to the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Definitely. I mean, if I think of people having fun at a party, I'm not thinking of, you know, whatever tinny 20s jazz they could come up with. I mean, I'm going to be thinking of dance music, and that's it works really well in that respect.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the one thing, you know, I was a little worried when I saw the trailer was almost like a movie in itself. The trailer, like, the amount of times I saw the trailer, I, like, memorized it by the time. It was just, like, they played it so many times on everything I watch. And I thought, oh my God, they're going to show just all the best parts in the trailer, and then the movie's going to be disappointing. And then the other part of the trailer that worried me was... there was a question before the movie came out of, are they going to try to spin this as, like, a story of excitement? Like, because the story really is a tragedy, and it really shows sort of, like you mentioned, the vulnerability of Gatsby. I mean, ultimately, by the end of the movie, you're not feeling like, oh, the 20s were this wonderful time. You're very much seeing that the paint has been scratched off of this gilded age, right? That underneath it's very rotten, you know, what's going on. Sure. And I think people were worried that maybe it was just going to be a celebration of excess versus actually getting to the heart of the story. But I think ultimately, I mean, how did you feel that the movie succeeded in getting to the heart of the story?
Well, I thought one of the sort of best ways that it went about doing that was how it was a celebration of excess in the beginning. And you have these big, fancy, flashy parties and, you know, fancy cars and people dressed fancy and it's all crazy. But really, in the second half of the movie, you don't have any of that. There's mm-hmm. not being parties. People are just kind of...
Yeah.
It's turned into this kind of really tense, awkward kind of character drama, which is really nice because it's sort of... You feel deflated afterwards. I kind of felt like that. You know, you feel like, oh, yeah, good excitement party. And then by the end, you're just kind of like, oh, that was a bad idea.
Yeah, exactly like the characters must have felt.
Right.
Which and that's another thing I liked about that is that they really did stay true to the story in that there are no parties in the, like, second half of the book. It's all you find out that he's just doing this all because he wants to attract Daisy's attention, and as soon as that happens, it's forget the parties and all that. And I noticed that this movie became progressively, you know, you could feel Baz Luhrmann's fingerprints progressively less, I felt. Mm-hmm. At least sort of in his more extravagant stylistic elements.
Right.
It's not that you don't completely forget that he's the director when you're watching it, but it really hits you in the face hard in the beginning, and then it really sort of tapers off into these like the barest of elements. And I mean, if we go back to that hotel scene, it's like, I think it's a great, you know, exposition of what I'm talking about, because at the beginning of the movie, it's just so extravagant and in your face. And these scenes are just so, there's all kinds of interesting shots and it's very, you know, rapid and all this. And then the hotel scene is like a play. It's mm-hmm. just, it's staged like a play. It's so simple that it just, it, the movie really kind of strips itself down to this barest, like you were saying earlier, Colin, character elements.
Mm-hmm.
Which was fantastic, I thought.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And what about Carrie Mulligan as Daisy and the love story as it was portrayed? I guess, like, because it's been so long since I read the book, and I know we're going to try not to compare it, I had forgotten that there was such a love story at the center of the story. And I got very enchanted in the moment, like, when they first meet again, you know, when they reunite in the little cottage, mm-hmm. and he's so nervous, and he goes out in the rain, and he's acting ridiculous, and the little comedy of errors in which they finally see each other again, Daisy and Gatsby, and the way that the meeting is arranged, and just all of this work goes into it, and blah, blah, blah. I'd kind of forgotten about that whole part of the story. What did you guys think of Daisy as a character and of that relationship?
Well, if we're talking about Carrie Mulligan, I really liked her in this movie. I thought that she nailed what she had.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that she really captured certain aspects of Daisy really, really well, like especially the first scene that you see her. She's so sort of like, you know, waifish and just, you know, like that's mm-hmm. that's very much how I pictured her. And then again in the hotel scene where she just like can't handle what's going on, I thought that was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then Colin, I don't know if you, I mean, if you remember, but one of our other friends, Heather, who also saw this movie with us, when we saw it, Colin and I mentioned the point that, you know, you sort of sympathize a lot more with Daisy in the movie
mm-hmm.
than you end up doing in the book, which I think is entirely because of Carrie Mulligan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that they make her so sympathetic. And that was one of the things that it was well done that they made her sympathetic, but I don't know that it should have been done.
Right, right.
At the end, you know, she's come off as so sympathetic instead of, you know, part and parcel of this whole sort of destructive relationship. And then they just paint Tom as, like, the worst guy ever, you know? He's just this racist oaf. And so at the end, when Nick is talking, and it's his voiceover, and he says something along the lines of, you know, those two were just, you know, they just used people up and left them as wrecks. And I was like, well, but the movie only showed us one person really sort of doing that.
Well,
right, 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 right. I definitely agree with that. In, you know, so in the book, you really get the sense that Daisy is like an integral part of this whole destructive problem.
Mm-hmm.
And she is to a degree in the movie, you know what I think? Enough.
To a degree, but not nearly as much as Tom is presented.
I feel like part of that is the way that the narration is done in the book, and the point of view of the author and the narrator in the book is blaming Daisy because of, you know, personal reasons of siding with Gatsby and of siding with, you know, of having a point of view in the book. Whereas when we see it on the film, we can understand, we can see how she's been victimized by her husband. And then we can also see how she is enchanted by Gatsby and is authentically falling for him. At the same time, we can see how she's too fragile to really handle it. He's this kind of force for change, and she's not brave enough to move forward with him. She needs stability. She can't. she can't take that step with him. And there are hints that she's not going to be able to do it throughout. Like,
right.
It's this dream. You always kind of feel almost heartbroken for Gatsby even before he gets his heart broken, just because you just kind of know it's coming just from the way she behaves, that she, you just can tell she's just not strong enough to leave her life behind.
Or not even that she's not strong enough, but just that that's not really what she wants.
Or that's not what she wants. But I mean, yeah, that too. And also, you know, he keeps trying to pressure her. Gatsby keeps trying to pressure her, like, oh, you never loved him. And you can tell from other conversations that have happened that that's not the case, that she did love her husband at one point.
Right.
But I kind of feel like it's a point of view thing. And I did feel, as when I was watching it, throughout the movie, I was very sympathetic to Daisy, but at the same time, in that final scene when she turns on him after she was the one to run over, you know, the redhead, and then she just goes off and misses his funeral, I felt mm-hmm. so angry at her that I agreed with everything he said in the narration, because right. I was so pissed off at her to do that, for him to, her to do that. Like, I did feel betrayed by her, like, as a viewer.
Right. And that's, like, that's much more the book, Daisy.
And so I did feel like that at least was successful, in the sense that I believed that, and I mean, I think in some ways that hotel scene also made the husband sympathetic. Tom? Is that the husband's name?
Yeah.
Even though throughout the whole movie he's horrible, in that hotel scene, you could see it from his side. I mean, not that he was right, but you could see right. all the different sides that were going on, and the way in which he reacted to his mistress dying, and just all the things that he was doing. Like, you could actually see him more than just a caricature, because throughout the whole rest of the movie he was this caricature, and then you finally realize near the end that he actually is invested in his marriage.
Well, he's a really good actor too. Yeah. I mean, he pulled that off really well. That, I mean, that's the one thing I guess I can say about this movie more than anything, is that what really held it together through all sort of the craziness at the beginning, and just the way it sort of changes throughout, is that the performances are just, I felt, all around really good throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
With one exception.
Who's that?
I don't really like Tobey Maguire, but
you don't,
I mean,
like Tobey Maguire?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
The character is kind of a boring character. He's kind of stuck. It's a kind of a non-character, because he's this just basically the narrator.
I totally disagree with that. Like, the Nick in the book is not a non-character. He right. finds ways to.
So that's like the writing of the screenplay, though, don't you think? Right. That they
find ways
created
to inject his personality into, you know, into what he's. How he's narrating the story, all that stuff, it comes through very strongly in.
I feel like Tobey Maguire's characters don't really ever have a personality. I guess that's true. But I don't ever feel like it's bad acting. I just feel like, I guess I hadn't thought about it that way.
He always has this befuddled look on his face that kind of bugs
he's
me.
He's always like
the
nice
really
guy.
The character really could be more engaged and more interested in what's going on, but he just always has this kind of look on his face like, what's going on?
Yeah, and Nick is not a befuddled character. He's kind of a disengaged character, but that's by choice. Like, he makes that clear in the beginning of the story that, you know, that he sort of distances himself from people on purpose, because for whatever reason, he's that guy that everyone confesses to. You know, like, there's always that person, and he doesn't want to be that person. So he's very kind of aloof on purpose, whereas you don't really get that from Tobey Maguire, I don't feel. I mean, I like him in some stuff, but I don't know. I didn't really find him very compelling in this story.
On the plus side, I felt like the connection between him and Gatsby, in some ways it was a love story between them. You know, he was the only one there at the end. Like, you felt that connection between him and Gatsby of how they had really truly come to, you know.
That's true.
And I did kind of feel that connection. Of course, that might be because they're really good, they're best friends in real life, so he didn't have to do any acting, I guess.
Right, right. I feel like they did have good chemistry. I mean.
But it was really weird. Like, I have to say, if the way it was portrayed in the, I don't know if it's different in the book, because like I said, I haven't read it since high school. the way it was written in the book, like, can you imagine? You're just like, your rich neighbor next door is like looking at his window at you every day and like stalking you, like.
Yeah, in the book, he's never looking out his window.
It came up as very, like, a little bit creepy at first. And I was like, what is going on with Gatsby? Yeah,
you don't really get that sense in the book.
It takes a while for him to figure out why Gatsby is turning his attention to him, which was...
The only time he sees him in the book before he goes to the party is at the when he's on the dock that one night. Like, he doesn't really see him in the windows and stuff, as far as I recall. I think that was sort of a storytelling device for the movie, you know, visuals.
It was a storytelling device, and I think it was another one of my sort of the things that kept it from being a great movie was that it was like beating you over the head with stuff, in that Gatsby's supposed to be mysterious, but instead of letting him be mysterious, we have to keep showing him in the window. Look, he's mysterious, you know, and
he's angrily talking on the phone.
Yeah, and the green light gets mentioned 20 times, and all this other stuff just hits you over the head again and again, and I just wanted to tell the movie, like, I get it, I know. Let me understand. Yeah,
especially because the green light is not such an important thing in the book, and it is absolutely the dominant visual image of the movie, which I thought was weird.
Over and over.
Oh, yeah, I was like, I left the movie thinking I'm going to have, like, nightmares about green lights or something.
Right.
It was so, you know. Harped on. Did you guys watch it in 3D?
God, no.
No, me neither. I tried to avoid 3D, but I mean, I can see why they would have chosen it just because it's such a visual movie. But at the same time, I don't feel like it would need to be in 3D. But
yeah, I don't feel like
no movie needs to be.
Well, and I guess just one more point going off of what Colin was saying about what keeps this movie from being a great movie rather than a good movie is I think the movie sort of holds your hand a little bit too much story-wise. And my favorite example of that is when they're in Gatsby's bedroom and he's throwing the shirts, and Nick narrates that scene where he says, you know, right before Daisy says the famous line about the beautiful shirts. In the movie, he sets that up for you by saying, like, 5 years of emotion warred on her face, and yet all she could manage was blah. But in the book, you don't get any of that. It's just that scene, and then she says that thing about the shirts. There's no, like, explanation as to what she's talking about or anything like that. You just kind of have to figure that out on your own, where in the movie it's like, here's what we're trying to get you to see, you know. So that happens a few times in the movie, where I feel like if they had just kind of let us figure it out sort of organically.
I think that's one of the big problems with voiceover in general, and this is a problem on TV a lot that people complain about all the time online. If you ever are following, like, Twitter commentary, everybody's always annoyed. I think generally if you can take away the voiceover, it's better.
Yeah, well, it's obvious from the rest of the movie that Carey Mulligan is a good enough actress to have explained all that to us with her face.
Isn't that the number one rule of acting? Show, don't tell. And yet so many movies and television shows are determined to tell us, even though they could just show us, because you've got Carey Mulligan cast, so you don't need to tell us because you have her. To show us everything.
Right.
There's a great line in Futurama where the robot devil says, "You can't just have people stand around and tell me how they feel. That makes me angry."
Yeah. I agree. And it's like, so much can be portrayed through the actors, through the music, through the costumes, which, by the way, were very beautiful in the sets. Yes. I mean, I thought it was a good looking movie, but I think I agree for the most part with you guys about that aspect. I guess I kind of went into it just thinking I was not going to like it. And then I was pleasantly surprised by it being an enjoyable movie that went by quickly for me. Was kind of my ultimate sort of thing that I left with. I was just sort of pleasantly surprised by it being enjoyable. And then I was surprised also by just how sad for Gatsby I was. I hadn't remembered any emotional response to it.
Yeah. I think that's, and these are all things that, you know, go towards the positives of why it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
That it was able to accomplish all of that.
Do you guys ever watch the Robert Redford version?
I have not
seen it. Long ago in high school.
Okay, yeah. Because my grandma was saying she likes that version better, but I haven't seen it. I think it's on Netflix, so if anybody who's listening wants to see it, it's now on Netflix if you want to watch the Robert Redford. And is it Faye Dunaway? Because I think it, as Daisy it might be. I can't remember.
I don't know. No, see, that I don't see, but, you know. But, hey, that's just me.
But yeah,
I mean, and I also pointed out to somebody, I was talking to somebody about how, oh, at first I was like, Leonardo DiCaprio, I don't know about that. And they're like, well, who would you have cast? And like the same thing when I said, I don't like Tobey Maguire, well, who would you have cast? I'm like, well, I don't know, but like those questions are impossible to answer. It's like, I just know who I wouldn't cast. You know? It's not like I have any ideas, but.
Oh, the one with the Great Gatsby from 1974 that had Robert Redford. It was Mia Farrow as Daisy, Mia Farrow, and I guess Francis Ford Coppola wrote the screenplay adapted from the novel. So,
Well, see, now I am kind of interested in this.
Yeah, so I'm going to watch it. I think I did watch it back in the day, but I just don't remember it. And I'm gonna watch it just out of curiosity to see how they portrayed it.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure it would be much less stylized.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be different. And so any other final thoughts on that before we move on to Star Trek?
I'm good.
No, I think that's, we did a good 30 minutes there. I think that's good.
Okay, cool. So Star Trek Into Darkness, initial sort of thoughts on the movie, how you think it measured up to other Star Trek films and how it succeeded as a motion picture.
Yeah, go ahead, Colin.
I went into it thinking it would hopefully be like the 2009 one, in that it would be really exciting and really flashy and not at all like I imagine Star Trek being, but I would still be really entertained.
Right.
And I thought the characters would probably be good and the plot would probably be nonsense. And then what I got was a film where there was a lot of action, it was really flashy, the plot was nonsense, the characters were really good.
Such nonsense.
I loved it. It made no sense at all. And I just didn't
get. Yeah, I had the exact same reaction. Like, I kind of have a blind spot, I think, when it comes to, like, Star Trek. Because for all the things that we talk about all the time, there is no reason why we should have liked this movie. Like, there's just not. There's, other than the fact that I thought the actors were really good, like, the plot is the dumbest plot in the world. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, when I left the movie at the end, I kind of just felt like, wait, what was that? Like, the plot made no sense at the end. By the time I was done with it all, I was just like, wait, what is going on? Like, what was even the point of the Marcus girl? And she, and we'll get into that. But I mean, I didn't think it was as good of a movie as Star Trek 2009. But you know what I thought was the most successful part of that movie was the buddy comedy aspects. All the comedic parts that were like the character moments were gold, I thought.
Yeah, that's always been.
And I think that they should just do a version that's just a comedy and just do one like a buddy comedy in space. They're just out on the Enterprise. Like, let's just do that version.
Oh my God, you are going to love Star Trek 4. Let me just tell you.
Right. Oh yeah, it's basically 2 hours of buddy comedy.
Okay. That's what it is.
Like, let's all say what our favorite buddy comedy moment was, because there are so many good ones to choose from.
And then in terms of the dramatic aspect of the movie, the best part of it was that radiation scene, and I was thinking, oh, what a great Kirk Spock moment. And then my uncle lent me The Wrath of Khan, and I was like, what? You just stole this scene from The Wrath of Khan! It tricked me into thinking it was a good scene!
Yeah, that's...
I was like, I can't believe they just stole this entire scene from the other movie and just switched the characters.
See, but what's great is that they steal that scene, and then they follow it with the con screen, which is totally, like, from a different part of the original.
Yeah, and from a different person.
Yes.
They switched it up. They made Kirk Spock and Spock Kirk, and they just changed it up.
And then Spock was legitimately angry in this one, where Kirk was, like, faking all along in the original.
Yeah, I mean... It is funny how you, for someone who's totally uninitiated like Lucia.
Yeah, I knew nothing.
Oh, that's a great scene. It's like, whereas I was sitting there going like, did they just, okay, I guess we're just doing this. You know, like I actually liked that moment in the movie, even though it was totally uninspired and all they did was switch it around. I was just like, oh, that's interesting. They like chained them. They switched the characters. I don't know. Maybe that's all I'm expecting now from the movie. Like, I was actually happy with that. That, like, that's how far my sort of standards have fallen. But I don't know. I thought that was interesting. But, I can't imagine seeing this movie without having seen Star Trek II, though.
Yeah, for the listeners, let's share with them sort of your experience with Star Trek, because I went into it never having seen the other Star Trek movies other than the reboot in 2009. I had seen the original series a few episodes here and there when I was a kid, and some episodes of The Next Generation when I was a kid. So I have an understanding of who the characters are in a rudimentary sense. You know, I'm familiar with the universe, but I have no any expert knowledge of any kind and had never seen the movies. Kyle, I know you're a big fan of Star Trek, and Colin, you too, right? You guys have both.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen every episode of every series probably multiple times. There are certain series I've seen more than others, but I've seen all the movies. I mean, I've read a lot of the books. I mean, I'm about as big a fan as you can get.
What's the best series?
Without going too far.
Yeah. Well, no, I went too far, and then I stopped.
Is the original series your favorite series, or is?
Oh, yes. Well, the problem with what's your favorite series is that I like all of them for various reasons. Yeah. I mean, I love the original series just because. I love everything about it. I love the cheap effects. I think it's
amazing. Gosh. You guys, you have to go on Netflix and read the episode descriptions of the original series Star Trek. I was going on there because I wanted to watch the Khan episode, his first entrance into the original series. But I didn't end up watching it because I fell asleep because I've been working late shifts lately.
Well,
I loaded it up and I was looking through all the episode descriptions trying to find the right one. And... oh my God, they are the best episode descriptions in the whole world. Colin, you tell us your Star Trek experience while I look them up, and then I'm going to read some of them because they're hilarious.
I mean, like Kyle, I grew up sort of religiously watching Next Generation, and then later found the original series, and I kind of waver back and forth between the two. I usually like TNG better. And I read a lot of books.
Because Picard, are you a Picard, or is Picard better than Kirk?
But they're so different. It's, you know.
I like Picard better, I think.
I mean, if the criteria is red, then an apple is better. But if it's orange, then an orange is better.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
I have never been a fan of that debate. Like, which is the best?
No, yeah.
Are we going to talk about that? That's
Picard's just more dreamy. I just like him better. I'm sorry. I just like him better.
Yeah, you can. You can like him.
But, oh, my gosh. These episode descriptions are... just so amazing. Okay, here's an episode description from the original series. Kodos, a fugitive mass murderer, is a 23rd century Shakespearean actor. When a friend is murdered, Kirk asks a Shakespearean troupe to investigate.
Yeah, no, that's a great episode.
That's from the week that the studio had a Shakespearean production that stopped, and so they had all the extra pops lying around.
Yeah. That's actually probably how that happened.
No, I'm sure it is.
Not even.
I mean, that's how they got all the Nazi episode, the Roman episode, the whatever.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they're just so amazing. Oh, Kirk meets Lazarus, who claims he's chasing his parallel self through space and time. And if Kirk doesn't help him, the entire multiverse is at risk.
Yeah. Well, you Bones, don't want to put the multiverse at risk.
Here's the description. This is my favorite one, sure. I think, maybe. From The City on the Edge of Forever.
That's the best episode.
Oh, is it? Okay. Bones travels back to 1930s America and inadvertently destroys the future. To reverse the damage, Kirk and Spock also go back, and Kirk falls in love.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You,
that
you know,
has to be the are, best episode ever made, right?
Lucia, if you're thinking that you need to go watch some of the movies, you have got to go back and watch some of these original series episodes, especially that one.
Especially,
I mean, clearly I do, because these episode descriptions are amazing. Like,
if you really want to understand, like, the Kirk, Spock, like, McCoy, like, what makes that character trilogy the actual, like, heart of the show and the movies and why it's been so successful for so many years, that episode will tell you all you need to know. Like, you really should watch it.
Oh, my God, you guys, I have to watch this episode. It's called Wolf in the Fold, and the description is one line. Scotty is suspected of murdering a belly dancer. Oh, my God. I need to watch that one immediately.
That's the Jack the Ripper episode.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't even mention Jack the Ripper.
Oh, my God. Yeah. These descriptions are amazing.
Yeah, Lucia, Jack the Ripper is involved in that.
Oh,
episode.
Wow. And there's a Roman, there's a Bread and Circuses. I have to watch that one.
Yep.
The Enterprise discovers a planet whose oppressive government is a 20th century version of Earth Roman Empire. Yeah, this is like, clearly I need to watch this show. I need it.
Yes, also, I can't believe
there are a couple other ones like that, Lucia. There's one called what's the one?
Oh, there's one about Play-Doh. There was one I read where it was like, there's a world, about, like, based on Plato's beliefs or something.
Yeah, and Kyle, what's the one with the actual, like, the Greek gods in it? Was that Who Mourns for Adonis?
Yeah. Like, Apollo or someone is actually in
that. Apollo's
Here. A powerful being claiming to be the Greek god Apollo appears and demands that the crew disembark onto his planet to worship them. Oh, my God, this is amazing.
Oh, it's amazing. My favorite.
There's one where they go to Eden called the Apple.
What's the one that has Abraham Lincoln in it?
Oh, my God. I read that description.
Oh, what one was that?
That episode's amazing, too, where they have to go, battle. It's like a good and evil battle, like, actually played out for these, like, beings. Like, it's great.
Yeah. So...
Oh, there's one particularly lazy one when it comes to sets and design. And I can't remember the title, but they have to go back to the 60s and observe life. And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's, what's that called? Like, Operation, I don't remember, but, there's so many good ones. My favorite is the Doomsday Machine. That's just the best thing in the whole world, but, anyway, so.
Yeah, I feel like the biggest benefit of these new Star Trek movies is that they kind of inspire me to want to go back and become a Star Trek fan, because I've always been more of a Star Wars fan. Like, I always, I knew about Star Trek and I watched some of the episodes, but I never was, like, passionately into it or anything. And after watching The Wrath of Khan, now I am, like, really wanting to watch more.
Well, and I hope that that is the ultimate outcome, because, like, as Colin was saying, these two movies, the new ones, are nothing like Star Trek. I mean, it's not Star Trek. It's only Star Trek because that's the name of it, and it has the characters and the ship and, like, but I mean, it's nothing like actual Star Trek. So they're fun, like, exciting movies or whatever, but, if it inspires, like, people to go back and watch actual Star Trek, then that's great.
And now I'm curious to hear what you guys think of the character of Carol Marcus and the way that she was portrayed in this particular Star Trek Into Darkness. What did you think of that?
Well, I think it's pretty telling that I guess some news came out that there was originally supposed to be, like, a shower scene in which Benedict Cumberbatch was shot totally topless, but that got cut, and then a certain other scene didn't get cut.
Yes, there has been a lot of hullabaloo on the internet, angered at the depiction of women in this new Star Trek movie. And so I had already read that before I went into the movie, so I had that in the back of my mind when I watched it. So I don't know what I would have thought if I hadn't seen that already, but I did laugh out loud in the moment where Kirk turns around and all of a sudden she's in her bra and underwear for no reason at all. Like, it's one thing for us to see her in a bra and underwear because, he goes into her room or she's having, she's with a guy or, like, whatever scene, but it was just so random. She tells him to turn around for no reason. She decides to take off her clothes. like for no reason. So it just felt very.
Well, I think he's gonna put on a thing, but like it.
But
was,
it didn't. It,
was
it wasn't established.
Stupid,
if like, they had established like he had to too, and they were peeking at each other, that would have been a really cute scene. Like if they were both
that,
having
that would have been subtle. Lucia.
That would have been adorable. Like if they were both changing, and you know that. But the way it was portrayed, it was just like laugh out loud ridiculous. Of all of a sudden, get the hot actress in her bikini.
Women in the original Star Trek are actually like more liberated and like
the women in the original Star Trek. I've never seen skirts so short. I was like, woo, look at that.
But they have like responsibilities and stuff. It's
yes,
not like whereas you know, which is
although I have to say, Uhura. Uhura in the new movie had a lot more to do than Uhura in Wrath of Khan. All she had to do was like say a couple commands. She didn't get to do anything in the other movie. But
she's a lot more competent than.
But there was a
Vulcan
lady of oh my god, young Kirstie Alley in the Wrath of Khan. To the listeners, I can't help but make comparisons between the two and jump between because I just watched them both so quickly. Young Kirstie Alley as the Vulcan. In command of Spock was excellent. She got do some stuff, but yeah, I feel like Carol Marcus just wasn't a real character, and poor Damon Lindelof, who's one of the writers of the Star Trek movie, he was one of the Lost executive producers.
That's what was so unfortunate.
He got a lot of Twitter hate when the backlash was coming in about the movie about its depiction of women. He got a lot of. People, you know, just telling him how she just wasn't a real character and blah, 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 which I agree. At the same time, I don't think bullying writers on Twitter is maybe the thing I would choose to do, whether or not I like their movie.
Well, I don't feel like it's going to make him do anything different.
No, but I think actually he actually had a very, I kind of felt bad for him, not bad enough to forgive him for ruining all the female characters on Lost in the last two seasons, because really he does have a problem. But he really is not trying to do anything wrong. And he actually admitted that they totally messed up her, that was ridiculous, that it was very gratuitous. He admitted that it was ridiculous.
Well, yeah, Carol Marcus is only in this movie for name recognition. It's because people who've seen the original Star Trek know who Carol Marcus is.
Especially
and if there's a movie about
the original Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, if there's a movie about Khan, you're going to be like, where's Dr. Marcus? Blah, blah, blah.
And also because it's like Khan wasn't even really the bad guy in this movie. It was really her father was this like arch villain for no reason. Like I didn't really understand. Yeah. That was what I thought was one of the biggest failures of the movie was the character of General Marcus, or was he an admiral or what was he?
Admiral
Marcus.
I feel like
his character was just so arch. That was like the biggest failing. Cause I thought Khan was actually really interesting. Even though I didn't, you know who he was, but then to ultimately it be all about some plot that the Federation has and blah, 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 for no reason at all. I just didn't feel like that was at all justified and made any narrative sense. And then, like, I thought maybe there was going to be some payoff. Like, there was going to be some reason why, like, Carol Marcus existed or why he existed or I don't know. They're just, like, never – it was like it was missing one big element of the plot to make it work. There was just something not quite there for it all to hang together.
Yeah, they took Khan and instead of – yeah, he really wasn't the villain.
This was, I guess, how he becomes the villain. This was the story of why he needs to get revenge, right?
Because he was actually pretty dang sympathetic, I thought. I mean, basically Starfleet – you know, woke him up and then used him to design weapons and then kept his family hostage. And I was like, well, yeah, this guy should
be pissed. Kind of pissed too.
And then like, you know, even when they're on the, whatever the big evil ship is.
The Vengeance.
Because
there's definitely
even when they're on that, you know,
Starfleet named the Vengeance.
Yeah. But even
wasn't
when
the Defiance?
That, like,
it wasn't.
No, I think Kyle's right. I think.
It doesn't matter.
Is that the one?
Well, either way, when they're on that though, then, like, he's helping them, and he's doing his part, and then Kirk's like, hey, Scotty, make sure you shoot him.
Right.
Well, but he was helping.
Look, you keep betraying Khan.
Yeah, I know. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The revenge is all, you know, you can't really blame Khan for wanting to get revenge all those times he wants to get revenge.
Then Khan does kind of turn, like, homicidal for like.
Well, there's that, yes.
No reason.
I mean, yeah, but.
It's like,
don't we all turn a little homicidal?
Yeah. At what point did you realize Benedict Cumberbatch was Khan? Did you suspect it, or were you already spoiled?
Well, I suspected it from the very beginning because I had heard – well, I didn't know one way or the other. I had heard that it was Khan, and then I heard that it wasn't Khan, and then they were laying hints pretty friggin' thick for people who have seen Star Trek II and know yeah. about the Khan character and stuff. And So, I mean, I figured it out a long time before they actually revealed it. I mean, it was
mm-hmm. –
so, yeah.
Yeah, what did you think about the casting of Benedict Cumberbatch? As somebody who, I know, Kyle, you really love Ricardo Montalban's portrayal as Khan.
Well, how could you not? I mean,
how could you not? I was really sad. After I saw The Wrath of Khan, I was really disappointed that they didn't incorporate his excellent accessory style into the movie. Because clearly has the Michael Jackson gloves and the excellent necklaces.
And the huge V-necks to show off that chest.
Yes. Yeah. This Benedict Cumberbatch didn't have that same sense of style. I guess getting betrayed by the Starfleet is the way in which you develop a good sense of style.
Apparently. Yeah. I mean, I liked Benedict Cumberbatch with what he had to work with. I mean, I thought he did a good job of portraying the whole I've been betrayed thing. Like,
yeah.
He did that really well without getting insane, you know, which I thought was good.
It didn't really feel like aspect.
Khan per se to me, just because, as you've seen now, Khan is sort of a very different character in the original. But I mean, I liked him for what he had and for what he did.
Mm. Yeah. It's a much different Khan. I mean,
yeah.
The original one is much more like, I am the superior intellect, you know, and this Khan is much more kind of crafty and not quite so grandiose.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is what makes him not really Khan, though, like right. at the same mm-hmm. time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of, I thought, a little disappointing in the end. It works in the movie, but it's kind of, so in The Wrath of Khan, you know, you have to beat Khan by kind of playing on his own sense of superiority.
Right.
At the end of this movie, they don't, and I understand what they were doing, because they're trying to show Spock's character development with the whole, like, you know, how can you break a blah if you can't even break a man's arm, and then
at the end,
he breaks his arm, and you're like, okay, growth, development. But they did that at the expense of that kind of playing on that pomposity, and I kind of missed that.
Yeah, the way they beat Khan was by just, like, beating him up.
Yeah.
Like, just kept hitting him. Like,
yeah.
And they had to work together as a couple.
Yeah, great. But like, yeah, the way they beat Khan is much preferable in Wrath of Khan. It's very, you know, that's much more.
Plus, there was like more humor involved in it, because I liked that little thing where Spock is like, he's just a two-dimensional thinker. He thinks he's so smart, but really, he's not.
Yeah, I mean, there's
when Kirk calls him, I'm laughing, Khan, at the superior intellect.
Yeah, that's just amazing.
And they are able to realize, like, even with his spirit intellect, there's just stuff he doesn't know about the way Starfleet works. So am I calling it the right name? Is that what it is, Starfleet?
Yeah.
He doesn't, like, they're able to trick him because he wouldn't know about the way these, like, codes work because he doesn't have the knowledge. And
Except in this movie, he designed the ship
and all this stuff.
Yeah,
he knows all the codes and all the secrets.
Yeah, because he's been working with General Marcus.
So all that to do is keep bludgeoning him, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, again, is just sort of a lazy storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and I mean, just coming back to that final sort of climactic battle, another thing that was disappointing about that to me, and I want to emphasize that I really like the movie, but that was also disappointing because at the end of the original Wrath of Khan, it's a super tense battle, but there's not a lot of action.
I mean, nothing happens.
Nothing happens, but it's really tense. And in this one, it was like, yeah, some people punch each other for a while, but I never felt that kind of tension.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't think it was as emotional in terms of, even with the radiation scene with Kirk going in there, the emotional aspect wasn't as powerful as it was in The Wrath of Khan.
No, and I think part of that's because they hint pretty heavily that, don't worry, Kirk's going to be fine.
Well, it's like, obviously he's Kirk. You know, he's not going to die. How can the rest of the series happen?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like,
and that's what's great about Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. Because they could kill him off, because as far as you know at that point, they could never make any more movies. As far as you know, Spock could die.
Well, that's what Leonard...
I thought they did kill him off. I was like, they can't have killed him off. I was like, I was yelling at my TV. I was like, they can't kill off. And my mom was like, just wait, Lucia, just wait.
And well, Leonard Nimoy thought there weren't going to be any more movies. Like, this was... He didn't even want to be in it. And they were like, what if we give you a great death scene? He was like, all right, cool. And then, like, as they were going along, he was sort of thinking, like, well, you know, maybe we have something here. So they just left that little scene at the end where he mind melds with
like,
the boy.
Amazing. And that coffin scene at the end was so good.
That was their out, just in case they were going to make more movies. But as far as the audience knew, Spock was dead.
Yeah, they
don't know. Like,
yeah.
Which is pretty awesome. I mean,
that was very awesome. Like, I was very impressed with that movie because, like, I didn't think it would necessarily hold up that well because, you know, it's 2013. This movie was made, I don't know when, but in the 80s, judging from Khan's hair.
Hey, Khan's hair is fantastic.
I didn't think it would hold up that well, and it really did hold up really well. And there was, like, just so many great quotes at the end, and this Into Darkness just didn't strike me with as much. It didn't have that classic quality of, like, oh, I want to rewatch this.
Well, yeah, these movies now, they're not, like, quotable.
And I feel like it was feel like Into Darkness, the biggest problem I have is I felt like it was such a missed opportunity with the first movie being so great, like the first reboot being pretty great, and being the first step in something. And now it's 2013, you're remaking Star Trek, you have these opportunities to do all these different things in a new way.
They made the same movie.
And yeah, and I felt like, and back to, sorry to jump around, but back to the whole aspect of the role of women in the movie, one of the things that was pointed out, like Felicia Day actually wrote this whole Tumblr post about it. It's like in that scene where you have all the admirals like meeting all the leaders of Starfleet, there is not one woman in that scene. It's in the future in 2067 or whatever year they're in. Like, what year are they in? It's supposed to be so progressive, right? Like, one of the big things about the original series is you have people of all different races and you have women and men and working in this in Starfleet. That it's multiracial and women and men are both can be leaders. And for them to just be a bunch of white men, old white men in that room, and not for them not to even try to do anything.
Well, and they definitely
progressive
that
in the movie when that is the what's the word? That's the legacy of Star Trek. For them to completely ignore that aspect of the legacy of Star Trek and to just make all the women just like no real characters is irresponsible. It's irresponsible of them.
No. There again, though, these are not Star Trek movies. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's nothing about them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what's – like, they have this opportunity to remake it in a different way, and it's like they could have made it even, you know, better because it's like even though Star Trek was trying back in the 1960s to be progressive, it was very – there was some tokenism involved, you know, but it could have been –
Yeah, but only in – yeah,
it could have been so much even cooler if they had, like, really made...
Yeah, but, I mean, and they carried that legacy through all the rest of the Star Trek series. I mean, in Next Generation, Picard's boss is a woman, you know, Admiral Nechayev and stuff. I mean, it's,
that's
you know, they're...
Exactly. So that's what I... Yeah, so this movie...
My Voyager, I mean, the whole show is...
Yeah, exactly. So this movies that are made so much later, they should be able to... For them to, like... Because what I found a little bit frustrating about it was... Like, okay, the thing about Kirk is he's, like, a womanizer, and that's, like, charming. You know, he's cute or whatever. He's all like, oh, every girl he looks at, he does a double take, like, he's checking them out. And it's like, that would be okay if there was also, like, women in positions of power versus it just being, like, your main character is sleazy and there are no women in power. So then it's, like, really – so then it kind of makes him seem even sleazier because – I don't know. It just, I just felt like I agreed with some of the points of view, you know, although it didn't like offend me just because I just didn't care about the movie. I don't know. I did think, you know, Zoe Saldana was great with what she had to work with. I mean, she could have had more to do, but.
Well, it's like the Kirk being a womanizer thing. That's, I mean, he's
that's not, normal, but it's like it would.
No, but I mean, like even in the original series, it's not to that degree at all. Like he's, it's not like that.
It's not as like as overtly, I mean,
he is a womanizer,
like,
but it is not ooh, like,
at every, he's like leering at every woman. It's like, be professional. You're wearing a uniform
really
right
do
now.
That. Yeah.
Like, come on. Like, I did think that in my head. And then I thought, really, Lucia, wow, you're taking this way too seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, respect the uniform, Kirk.
Yeah.
In my head. And then I'm like, oh,
well,
it's
does,
not a real organization. But
movies and stuff. But
yeah.
Not in this movie. Yeah.
It just, there was like a couple just little throwaway things, and that was like on the way for him. For some reason, he got to go in the big meeting. Even though he'd been demoted, he gets to go in the big power meeting.
Yeah, they made it a nice point to say, like, oh, it's captains and their commanders. And I was like, that makes no sense, but okay.
Yeah,
no, it was because they needed Kirk and Spock in that room somehow.
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's how they, this movie is mainly a series of scenes and like set pieces and stuff that they just kind of like put together.
We're great, I mean, great character moments set in scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. With nothing holding it together, really. But.
Everything that Bones does is perfect, I thought, in the movie.
But he doesn't really do anything. Like, this is another
I know. It's very small, but every line he says, like, was there some line where he goes, like, oh, what was the funny one? Oh, because, you know, he always says, like, I'm a doctor, I'm not a blah, blah, blah. You know, that's, he always says those lines. And there was, oh, what was the one he said?
I don't know.
It was so funny.
Like, I'm a doctor, not a...
It was really hilarious because it was very convoluted. Like, I'm not a blah, 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 blah thing. And I was, like, cracking up.
Yeah, but the reason why all that stuff is hilarious, though, is because of all the original series and all that. I mean, so that's – you
plus
really do have
the actor is really good who's playing –
yeah, he's great.
This
what's
I his
really
name?
Love him as Bones.
What's his name, this new
Carl
guy?
Carl Urban.
Carl Urban. Yes, Urban. I think he just got cast in, like, a TV show now, too, because people were really excited about him. Carl Urban, now I'm remembering.
Well, I loved him in Lord of the Rings, so
– oh, yeah. Who was he in Lord of the Rings?
He was – oh, God.
Was he one of the elves?
No, he's one of the Rohirrim.
Oh, he's Blondie's brother.
Aelmer.
He is the brother of awesome girl. Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, he is good as Dr. McCoy, but like the problem so far with these movies is that Star Trek's always been a triumvirate. It's Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Right.
You know, in these movies, it's Kirk and Spock, and like McCoy's there. Mm-hmm. Like,
and Uhura has more of a role than McCoy does.
Yeah, they've actually.
Yeah, that's true.
Which, I mean, I kind of get. But
I think,
like,
they should do more with Uhura, and instead of just making it be about like a love triangle, like, I think Uhura should get to do more stuff. At least she got to like talk Klingon.
Yeah, but they had to come save her.
Yeah. I'm hoping they'll bring, maybe the next movie, they'll bring more of the Klingon stuff in. Because that was kind of cool setup. Like, oh, we're going to have War with the Klingons. I was like, oh, War with the Klingons. That would be an exciting movie.
I bet they will. Because the end of this movie, they were kind of like, all right, now we're off to go explore and not have fighty action war movie stuff.
Oh.
So it's going to be exploration. And I don't think they'll actually go through with that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no. They'll have a war.
During Star Trek Enterprise, Star Trek Next Generation, when Worf is like, part of the cast. Are the Klingons like enemy people at that point?
Yeah, sort of. There's great episode after great episode of like Worf's struggle with being a Klingon in Starfleet. It's great.
It's like difficult. Yeah, I always kind of felt.
But they're
like,
not enemies though.
Okay.
No.
But they had been in the past. Allied. There's like a history of conflict. So he's.
Yes, that conflict gets resolved in Star Trek VI. So watch that. But yeah, there is a tension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's still a tension, and Worf is like a good way to sort of play off of that. There's a lot of great episodes about that, like the Redemption, you know, episodes and stuff like that.
And some of those arcs, like Redemption, are about the Klingons potentially not being allied with the Federation anymore. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But see, the problem is. Like, oh, it'll be great if they have war with the Klingons, except it won't really be great. It'll just be, like, a bunch of exciting battles. You know, like, it'll be devoid of all the stuff that makes it worthwhile. But, I mean, I'll still go see it and pay the money and enjoy it probably, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of, like, battles and action scenes and all that, I mean, in terms of J.J. Abrams directing, What were your thoughts on the visual aspect?
Well, he can direct an action scene. I mean, that's clear.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
looks,
I mean...
It looks great. I mean, whatever it's doing, it might be nonsense, but it looks pretty well done.
Yeah, but it looks pretty.
Let's float through an asteroid field to get into the...
Why? Because it'll look cool? All right. You know?
There are just so many ridiculous things, but it was good.
But if you compare that to, like, sort of the quaint nature of, like, of Wrath of Khan, it's like, and Wrath of Khan still seems immensely superior. Like, even though they have, like, that battle with the Reliant is, like, two ships of the line doing, like, broadsides, it's still fantastic.
Yeah, you know, and at least there weren't creepy ear slugs in this one. Ugh, I'm going to have, like, nightmares about those creepy ear slugs.
That's one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite scenes, though. I love when Khan's describing what the effect of those things are like on humans. That's one of my favorite scenes.
I'm itching my ear right now because now I think there's an ear slug in it. Goodness.
But I mean,
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was saying that scene also has one of my favorite deliveries ever, where Ricardo Montalban just says Admiral three times, but it's, you know,
Admiral Kirk.
He's just so
like three times, but it's so perfect.
Yeah, he is. It's very rare when you come across a performance like that. I mean, he just went for it and it worked perfectly, you know, like. So I guess my point from a little bit earlier was just that, like, you can have all the flashy action in the whole world, but, like, if you compare these two movies, it's clear which the better one is. And Wrath of Khan's, like, action scenes, quote-unquote, are nothing like the ones in Into Darkness, and it's still far superior, you know, just in terms of everything we've been talking about. But it creates tension, whereas there's not really tension in Into Darkness very much.
Yeah, I feel like part of it's a tricky movie to do because the first Star Trek reboot, you know, almost had an easy job in the sense that you get to do all the fun stuff of establishing the characters, and you get to have that. Kirk's arc in movie one is such a great arc. He's the screw up,
same arc in this movie.
Yeah, and that was the problem. I felt like that in this movie was he didn't have anywhere to go yet because it's too soon for him to have really grown up, but. You can't really do the same thing over again. He's sort of stuck in this, well, he's this prodigy and he sort of succeeded, but then he kind of screwed up and now he's been demoted, but really the arc in which, like, he has this redemption at the end when he saves the ship through sacrificing himself in the radiation chamber. Of course, he doesn't actually sacrifice himself because he's still alive.
Well, in all fairness, his character thought he was sacrificed.
Yes. No, so that was good. That was like a good, you know, thing. But in some ways, that, you know, that didn't work as well. Like, that would have worked better almost, you know, in a few years. Like, at this point in his story, it almost felt too soon. And then when you watch it, Wrath of Khan, it's a very different arc. It's like it's a man near the end of his career who has been put out to pasture too soon. Feels like he is, you know, everybody's telling him, like, that conversation that McCoy, that Bones has with him at the beginning of the movie sets up the arc. And then when you compare that to what happens at the end of the movie and how he reacts to Spock's death, it's such a great character arc for it's probably the best Kirk's ever been in the whole franchise, I would imagine, because Shatner's done better work than that.
I would agree with that, yeah.
And I just could tell watching that was just such a great arc for his character, that he's where he goes from the beginning of Wrath of Khan to where he goes at the end is such a great arc, and it you can't really replicate that, because why that works is that he's gone through this long career. So with Chris Pine's position, he's already done the awesome, like, oh, I'm the bad boy, and now I'm going to, like, you know, realize that my life's worth more than just getting in bar fights. And so then he's sort of stuck in this little bit of a limbo. So I feel like they were in a difficult position in terms of making that movie, and...
Well, that's what I mean about it having the appearance of Star Trek without any of the substance. I mean, it's like they tried to do the same story, but it was completely less impactful because, like, the arcs weren't there. The thing that made it impactful in Wrath of Khan didn't exist in Into Darkness. So mm-hmm. it's like I want to go back to what Colin said before about how that's, like, one of the best scenes in all of Star Trek, is that conversation. That's what you said, right?
Yeah.
It's like, in which is amazing because they're just sitting in his, like, living room. They're not on the Enterprise. They're not even in uniform. It's nothing to do with, like, space or anything like that. It's just this, it's these two guys talking about their careers and lives or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, because Star Trek Wrath of Khan, like most good science fiction, isn't really about the spaceships and the aliens and stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a movie about getting old and dealing with death. And I mean, those are two big weighty topics. It's set in space, but it's not really about that.
Right.
Yeah, and the way that the Kobayashi Maru works as sort of a metaphor for everything was really well done in The Wrath of Khan. Like, I knew about the Kobayashi Maru because of the reboot, They Have It Happen, where he cheats the test, right?
Right, which was probably a little less impactful for you, having not seen Wrath of Khan,
I still knew it was important. Like, I knew it was an important thing because I've heard about it from pop culture. So I was like, oh, cool, that's what this is about, when I've heard about it before.
But that's, entirely integral to Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, the way that they worked, that was very masterful plotting in The Wrath of Khan. Like, the way that they dealt with the Kobayashi Maru, starting off at the beginning of that movie, having the cadets do that test, and seeing the way they deal with it, wanting to know how he passed it,
mm-hmm.
finally finding out, then at the end, him realizing that he's never dealt with death before until Spock, that he's always just cheated death, he's never actually faced it. Like, that was amazing. Like, that was very powerful storytelling.
Yeah.
Right, and they were trying to do that in the beginning of Into Darkness with that lecture that he gets from Captain Pike. And I like Bruce Greenwood a lot as Captain Pike, but, like,
I know, I was sad, but, like, I mean,
so that was the whole point of that scene, right? You're just lucky and you're just skating by and you're just,
yeah, but it didn't come off very well.
Yeah, again, it doesn't come off the same way, just because we haven't seen Kirk doing all these things for so many years, because by the time of The Wrath of Khan, it's like you've had the whole original series, you had Star Trek the Motion Picture. I mean, so you have a sense of how he's operated for a long time, and then sort of him finally admitting that, like, yeah, all of that was just, like, bravado and none of it means anything when you're actually confronted by a real no-win scenario, and yep. then so yeah, I mean, it was absolutely masterful, but then they cannot replicate that in this new series.
Yeah, it's and I have to say, like, Chris Pine in this movie, it wasn't doing it for me. I felt like the Spock stuff was better than the Kirk stuff in Into Darkness. And but part of that was relying on all of the stuff that had happened in the first movie. We saw Spock lose his home planet in the 2009 reboot, so I had that in the back of my mind of Spock having gone all through this stuff. So when we're dealing with Spock willing to sacrifice his life and turning off his emotions and all those things, there was like a bit of a there was a history there for me. Right. As somebody watching it without like a huge Star Trek background, I had enough background to find that emotional. So I felt like the Star Trek stuff was, I mean, the Spock stuff was better done than the Kirk stuff in terms of the arcs.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little interesting how,
except for the Uhura stuff, which I honestly did not appreciate as much, their romantic relationship aspect, I didn't find.
Well, that's just difficult for me anyway. Like, and I don't know if you feel that way, Colin, but like, I just, Uhura and Spock, I don't see it. But
for me, it's kind of an extension of my bigger problem with Spock in the 2009 film and in this one, is that they're not really portraying him without emotions or having emotions.
He's right. more human than they play up his human half more.
Right.
Than in the
originals. Leonard Nimoy, one of the coolest things about Spock was that Leonard Nimoy played him so straight as a guy who didn't deal with emotions, you know? And so when Kirk would say something like in Wrath of Khan, when Kirk takes command and he says, well, I don't want to, like, you know, step on your toes, essentially. And Spock says, why have no pride to wound, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't get that impression from these movies.
Which really makes the death scene even more impactful in Wrath of the Khan. But I mean, I want to sort of compare those death scenes really quickly, because it's funny the way we're talking about the difference between these movies. In Wrath of Khan, it's two guys who know each other really well and fully understand each other. Like, Kirk fully gets why Spock did what he did. And Spock totally understands that Kirk is going to be totally destroyed emotionally by it.
Yeah, like, and he puts his hand up on the glass and just says, the needs of the many.
Yeah, exactly. And Kirk finishes the line. And it's like in Into Darkness, they use that death scene as the moment where they understand each other.
Right.
Right.
You know, whereas so it's completely different in that respect.
Yeah, especially if you think about it, there are, in some ways, there are two death scenes in the movie that bookend the movie, because at the beginning, Spock thinks he's going to die and is trying to just sacrifice himself, but Kirk doesn't let him. Kirk goes in and saves him. And then there's all this, like, pissy attitude between them because they don't understand each other. They don't get where each other are coming from. And then at the end of the movie, they seem to finally, I guess, get where they're coming from, but I don't know.
That's why I feel like a death scene as, like, a moment of understanding could be really impactful.
Mm-hmm.
But you know he's not really dead, you know? Like, that's the thing. It's like they use that as a vehicle for them to understand each other, but then he's going to get revived somehow, and then they'll understand each other. It's like, well...
But that having been said, at least for me, it still did have some impact, even though I knew that.
Right.
For me, it still worked to a large extent.
Yeah, and I think it at least shows us why Kirk deserves to have... Because I feel like part of my annoyance with the character of Kirk is I feel like, why does he get to be in charge of the Enterprise? There's like at least five other people on his crew I'd rather be in charge of the Enterprise, like at any given moment. So in that moment, you kind of get why he deserves to have command. You know, that moment was at least successful in the sense of he was really taking command. And you get why he gets to be in charge and not, you know, you know, Sulu or Scotty or somebody else who could, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of agree with that. I mean, I have sort of an overall issue with, like, why is Kirk the captain? He goes from being a cadet to a captain. I'm like, what? But you know, like, that's
and then Captain special. Pike, he has Admiral Pike he has is surprised that
something. In this movie, like, when he's not ready for it. I'm like, well, that's because you promoted him from being a, like, second year cadet to being captain, admiral. It's like, that's that was your fault, you know. You know, so it's there's just some of those overall things where I'm just like, that doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, I like, it's just, I don't know. So yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, they needed another, like, why does Kirk deserve to be a captain? But that just shows, like, what the one of the flaws of the first movie is. So
yeah,
that's, I guess, my perspective. But
now, do we know if they are already making a third one? Or are they waiting to see how the revenues go? I haven't been keeping up with the
what
news.
What I heard from the first movie was that they all signed on for a trilogy. I don't know if that's true, but...
It is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think they're making it yet, but, I mean...
But they're going to.
It's
going to
happen, I mean.
Yeah. And the box office has been disappointing, but not bad, I mean.
Right. I mean, it's no Iron Man.
The expectations.
It hasn't been as successful as Iron Man,
No, but I don't think it was going to be, so.
No.
I mean, I think it's disappointing in comparison to the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. Yeah. They're going to make their money back. I mean, it's going to make enough money for them to do a third. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that'll happen. I just wonder if it'll be the same movie a third time.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I'd hopefully. Really like it if they actually did some weird explorations or.
Yeah. Or if they had a plot that wasn't, like, a bunch of recycled parts of other Star Treks.
I'd love to see, like, a Gary Mitchell one, you know?
Who's Gary Mitchell?
he's a character from one of the original series.
One of many characters who basically becomes a god, and then of course goes wild with power. But then they have to find a way to take the ship back without him stopping them.
Oh,
yeah,
it's a pretty common Star Trek plot.
Yeah, oh, okay. A lot of people become gods in Star Trek, actually.
Oh. And then, of course, grow wild with power, and they have to find a way to take the ship back. And it's, yeah. It happens in something like 3 of the first 5 episodes. It's mm-hmm. crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, actually, how they were fixated on that for a while. But, yeah, what was that? What was that? Charlie X, was that?
Charlie X was another one, yeah.
Or that was a different episode, but it's the same thing,
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something. I'm not sure. Like, I've seen a lot of these episodes, like, a lot of times. I just don't always remember which one is which.
Yeah, Charlie X is the one that has, like, the teenage kid.
Yeah, okay,
and
yeah.
Gary Mitchell's when they go to the edge of the galaxy.
Oh, that's right, mm-hmm. Okay. Right.
But they both come back being, like, gods. And they're like, hold on, let me look. Let's see. Yeah, the Gary Mitchell one is the second pilot. Charlie X is the second episode.
Yeah, okay.
So Charlie X is the second episode, and then Where No Man Has Gone Before is the third episode.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one with Mitchell.
And they have, like, the exact same plot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, though. Yeah. No, there's so many, like, things they can... it's sort of clear that they're... Whatever they do, they're going to have taken it somehow from...
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the older stories, and I feel like they can do that in a more original way.
I was like surprised they took so much from an original story, because I thought one of the cool things about the reboot was it was a fresh direction, a new perspective, and it was like J.J. Abrams was not a huge Trekkie, and he was trying to honor the characters at the same time, do something new, and then ultimately it just kind of feels like a little bit of a pale imitation in this latest version, in this latest movie, a little bit.
Yeah.
You know. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I mean, I was going to say, I would agree with that. I mean, I think the first movie, when they just destroyed Vulcan, you're like, oh, yes, we're doing something different.
So they didn't destroy Vulcan in the original series?
No.
Oh, good, because that's so sad. I was very upset about that.
That doesn't happen. So that was the moment for me where I was like, okay, well, this is entirely new. And then they just went exactly the opposite for, you know, Into Darkness.
Yeah, maybe that's the problem of listening to too much feedback. Like, maybe they thought after the first movie, their Trekkies were mad and they listened too much about, oh, we need to go back and do more stuff like the old thing. And then they did a bad job of doing that because they didn't quite... You know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
What were you saying,
Colin? For me, the most emblematic moment of that, though, of what both of you are saying, is the phone call to old Spock. Because mm-hmm. they call up, and he says, I can't tell you anything about my timeline. Which sounds like, if you could easily take that as a metaphor for, look, this series is doing something different, so we're not going to let the old one interfere with it. But then,
but I'll tell you about it. I can't, but I'm going to. Yeah, that's a very good point, Colin. Good point.
That it was like, well, I'll make the exception for Khan because he was so dangerous or whatever. But, like, it's just like, I don't know.
They just pull him up on the computer and be like, oh, shit, this guy's bad news.
Yeah, I mean, they don't... it's obvious that Khan was exiled the same way for the same reason in this timeline. But yet they seem to just, why don't they just look him up on the computer? Yeah, exactly. It's like, why don't they just do that? Because then they couldn't shoehorn Leonard Nimoy into the movie.
Right. And that's what makes it such a nice metaphor for what happened in general, because it's like, they said, we can't look at the old movies because we're doing something new. Yeah. But okay.
It feels like too many cooks in the kitchen. It almost would have been worked better if there had been somebody with a specific vision of how they wanted to redo the, you know, do the reboot, and they had a clear vision of what they were going to do. And instead, you've got 3 different screenwriters and a director who all seem to have different ideas about where they're going.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And that's very clear.
That's kind of how it feels. But it, you know, at least we had some good character stuff mixed in there, and I did like a lot of the actors. you know, other than Chris Pine.
Yeah, we mentioned some, but like Scotty, I think, was just as funny as before.
Oh, he's so good. What's that actor's name again?
Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg. He was great.
I love that moment with his little friend in the bar. He's like, it was one of those great metaphor moments because he's like, what are you doing there? You're just sitting there. You don't even do anything. And it's like, he's not talking about the guy in the movie. He's talking about the character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, I mean, that's a great scene too, where Scotty always had the, he's always a very funny character, I thought, just, but not like from an actual comedy perspective.
Just because he's always funny. So frustrated, like everybody's breaking his ship all the time, right?
Yeah, Scotty was eventually funny because of all those lines, you know, which became classic.
Yeah.
You know, whereas in this movie, he's more like a comedy star, you know, but it's fine. It works.
But it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, so everyone's good in it. I mean, by that I expected.
Right.
Yeah, because I got that the last time.
Right, exactly. So next time I'm expecting, I'm expecting the same thing. I mean, I'm expecting
really good acting and fun movie and a really exciting movie and a really pretty movie, and I'm not expecting it to make any sense.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think if it does make sense, we'll be like, oh my God.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the best thing in the world. Yeah.
Take all my money.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, there's all kinds of interesting things that they could do. I just don't know what any of them will be.
Yeah, I mean, they already sort of brought up most of the famous Star Trek-y stuff.
No, I mean, next movie, they're like Kang and like Koloth and like the original series Klingons will probably be in it.
That's true.
And they'll all be like super caricatured, like, I don't even know what they'll be like, but it won't be anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it'll be set at the end of the war and they'll just redo Star Trek VI.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Have the Kittimer Accords and all that. Yeah. I don't know.
So, yeah, Lucia, you need to watch 4 and 6.
I'm going to watch 4 and 6.
You can skip 5. And I suggest that you do skip 5.
Oh, really?
Because you can actually literally go from 4 to 6 like nothing happened.
Okay.
And I think they did that on purpose because...
Yeah.
5 was such a travesty that they just like pretended it didn't exist in Star Trek 6.
Yeah.
Rightly so.
And you should watch 3 once because it does connect 2 and 4.
Well, I have to just because of poor Spock cliffhanger. I need to find out. I'm very worried about him.
It's not bad. It's just like when you see some of the other ones, you're like, there's really no reason to watch it more than once.
Right.
It's fine. I mean, it is what it is, but like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd is not my favorite.
Oh, Christopher Lloyd's in it?
He's like a bad guy Klingon, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Christopher Plummer is a much
Christopher
better
Plummer?
Bad. No, in Star Trek VI.
Oh my God.
He's amazing. He's a Shakespeare quote. You've totally got to watch that.
Oh my God, that's so exciting.
Shakespeare quoting Klingon. Who quotes it in the original Klingon? Or he says it better.
Oh, yeah. My Friggin God, amazing. That's amazing.
It's amazing.
That sounds really good. Yeah, I'm excited to watch more of the original series, Star Trek, and I feel like, though, that this latest Star Trek movie is not really imbuing me with a lot of hope for the action genre in general right now, because I just feel frustration with the fact that it's 2013, and you still just have such formulaic approach to, I just feel like we're not really progressing like the way that we should. Like when you have a movie in 2013 that is just the heroes are just so boring, and Kirk as a hero is just so boring and so typical, and the way that they treat the female characters, and you're just thinking I don't even blame the specific movie. I feel like it's just because they're just following these tropes that already exist, and they're not trying to do anything new, and it just makes you feel like, gosh, are we ever going to get to a point where people actually do something new with, you know, I don't know. Just, I feel like on TV they're doing it. On TV they're totally doing it. That's why I like TV better. But then movies just aren't. Movies are just staying with the status quo of these, you know, characters.
Yeah, that's because I think what you were saying about we're not progressing at all, that's because I think Hollywood's idea of progression is to make it bigger and more explosions. And
yep.
It's yeah, like, well, it's just there are so many fascinating characters on television right now that are so complex and interesting and of all different ages. And then it just seems like in these movies, these action movies, you just get these same characters over and over again, and it's frustrating. Like, they should.
Yeah, and it's weird because action has always kind of been like that, but like.
But like, I like action. It's like, I want a good action movie, but I just feel like they can do better.
In the action movie, like Heyday, like in the 80s and stuff, like, it was just different, though. It was like, yeah, every movie was the same, but like. I don't know. It wasn't upsetting like it is now. Like, I don't really know why.
I think it's because we watch a show like you watch something like Breaking Bad or Buffy or all these other shows that are dealing with like tension and stress and also bother to actually do character development. So then
I think that's what it is because, I mean,
then you watch a movie and you're disappointed that they don't do that because I think in some ways the long form storytelling of television has kind of ruined movies for me. The long story, because they're able to do so much more to the characters because you have 20 episodes or 13 episodes to develop a person, yeah. And then you watch a movie and you're just like, who even is this character?
But I mean, I was gonna say, like, someone like Colin who doesn't watch as much TV as you.
Well,
like,
nobody does. Let's be honest.
Like, I know Colin feels the exact same way about like 80s action movies versus action movies now, and it's not because TV ruined it for you, right?
Right.
I mean, like,
no,
yeah, that's true.
For me, it's kind of like it's those 80s ones were fine, but like in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
I saw The Last Stand, you know, which was kind of a Schwarzenegger attempt to redo an 80s movie, but in 2012, and it just wasn't very good. And I think in large part because, yeah, I think. It is a pretty stagnant genre. It's not a lot of people doing new stuff. And I don't know how to change that because it's much easier on TV also, I think, to throw a lot of ideas out there. And some will stick and some will pick up an audience. And you don't need as big of an audience to keep them going, just financially. Whereas if you make a big action movie, it has to succeed and it has to draw in a lot of money if it's going to make it back.
Yeah. And in some ways, it's almost easier to get the TV audience. Like, actually, I think more people end up watching TV than do the movies. But you have to actually get somebody to get off their couch and come to the movie versus it's so much easier to get a TV audience because if it's a network TV show, it's free for them to watch it.
Right.
If it's cable, they have to pay for cable. But if it's a network television show, they're not even paying for it. And they can get it for free and they can stay in their house and watch it versus in the movie industry, they have to actually get you to leave your house and come to the theater and pay for that ticket. So they're making a lot more money. But I think ultimately the numbers aren't even like more like, I wonder, because I'm thinking like the millions of people that watch, you know, let's say you have like 15 million people watching Dance with the Stars, you times that by $10 a ticket, that's $150 million box office, right? If people were actually paying for it, right? So the number of people are watching TV, more people actually watch TV, I think, than go to the movies, but it's harder to get them to, you know, enough people to pick the same movie that they can actually make that money.
Right. I mean, if you have 15 million people watching Dancing with the Stars, that makes it the number one show.
Right.
If you had 15 million people watch a movie at $10 a pop and it made 150 million, there's some movies there are a lot of movies that would be a loss.
Right. Because, because that would be like out of the whole weekend versus one day. Yeah. Because you'd calculate it all up. That would be
a loss. That's why they have to appeal to the lowest common denominator in a lot of movies so that everyone will go.
And connect it with Star Trek. I mean, they know that people like me and Kyle are going to go.
Right.
So they don't really have
to worry about it. They know they've got us. Even if we don't want to admit it. It's like, they know they have us.
And that's just not the case with TV necessarily.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like also one of the things that's happening is, I don't know if you guys are looking forward to any of the other movies that are coming out this summer. I mean, Superman's coming out, Wolverine's coming out, Iron Man 3 already came out.
I'm interested in Superman. There seems to be
a bit of a saturation at this point in terms of they're redoing Spider-Man again, like with like it just seems like there's this saturation right now of it's a little harder to succeed. Like everybody's trying to replicate the success of The Dark Knight and or of, you know, or sorry, what was the second Batman movie that did really well? Was that The Dark Knight?
Yeah.
Yeah. So The Dark Knight and Avengers and Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man that came out, you know, when I was an undergrad, like there are certain that tent pulled so big and they were huge. And so then all these other action movies are coming out, these superhero movies are coming out, kind of trying to replicate it. And a lot of them just aren't doing as well because it's almost like oversaturating the market. Like
what you just said there is exactly the point. The two movies that you named, The Dark Knight and The Avengers, for me were much more than action movies, which is why they were so successful, I think.
Exactly. Like, it's almost
the Dark
like
Knight especially.
The quality, they're just trying to replicate it without actually if they
Yeah, exactly.
Without actually making better if Star Trek II had been a better movie, they might have been able to make more of success than they have. Like it almost seems like it's mattering how good the movie is, which is shocking because who would have thought
it's weird.
American public would care how good the movie was. But yeah. It seems like we do. Because I mean if you think
about it. Well, not if it's a Transformers movie.
Well, Transformers. Yeah.
People will still go see it.
And that's true.
I wanted to be excited about movies again.
I know. I was thinking for a second, wow, we only go see good movies as a country. We're so good. Well, speaking of the Transformers movies, have you guys seen those trailers for Pacific Rim?
I'm so excited about Pacific Rim. It's going to be so dumb, and it's going to be glorious.
It has, like, two of my favorite TV actors in it. The guy who plays Jax on Sons of Anarchy, Charlie Hunnam, and then Idris Elba, who I watched on this what's the show I watch him in? That's a British show. It's very creepy show about serial killers, and he's a cop.
Isn't it Luther?
Yeah, Luther. Yep.
I don't even watch that, but I know that that's
what
Luther. It is.
I was like having a brain loss. So I was like really excited to see two of my favorite TV actors in a movie. And even though it looks kind of Transformers-y, it's Guillermo del Toro, right? So it will be artsy and awesome. It won't be like Transformers.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because Colin and I are sort of, at least for me anyway, I'm kind of a new like convert to like the idea of like Godzilla movies and stuff. And like, it looks like trying to combine that with like big robots that fight. And I'm like, all right, I'm all over this.
Sign me up.
And the coolest part of it, of the trailer to me, was the idea that when aliens come, we have to worry about them not just coming from the sky, but they could come from a portal under the sea. Like, how awesome is that? Like,
that's like all of these Godzilla monster movies.
I didn't know about that. I was like, that's so cool. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know anything about that. So I was just like, wow, that's really cool. Like, I just thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I also like how, like... Huh? Go ahead.
No, speaking of cool things about Pacific Rim, do you guys know what the main character's name is?
I think you told me, but I don't remember. But it was amazing.
Okay, so the main guy, Charlie Hunnam, his name is Rally Beckett, which, okay, yeah. Fine, he sounds English, whatever, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, but then you have Idris Elba playing, and I kid you not, Stacker Pentecost.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's excellent. And are they going to both get? Do they both get to use their British accents? Because they're both British. And
I feel like a guy named Rally Beckett probably is going to be.
Yeah. Okay, well, no, I want to hear Ron Perlman though. Like, what's his name?
Oh yeah. Oh, Ron Perlman's in it too, and he's from Sons of Anarchy too. You'll know about this soon, Kyle.
Ron Perlman looks weird and is weird.
Yeah. Hellboy.
Yeah. Now picture his face before you. Okay. Imagine his face.
Yes, I've got it.
You are looking at. Hannibal Chow.
Oh, Hannibal Chow, obviously. Hannibal Chow.
Like, I
and
would just see this movie based on that. Like,
I know.
How far in the future is this? This is like futuristic too, right? They're like
Well, I would think it's sometime in the future.
Yeah, because they have to have developed the technology.
I don't think it's too far in the future, but
mm-mm.
So
apparently we can build big like mech warriors. I mean, that's
really smart. I was like, go humans when I was watching that trailer, because I was like, yeah, if we have gigantic aliens that came to Earth, like, obviously we need to create huge robots to fight them. Like, that's smart. But, like,
I was thinking about this. Like, they must have already been built, though. Like,
yeah, they must have taken ore. They must have taken.
Why do these things exist?
It must have taken a while to build up the resistance. Like, maybe they were getting along with the aliens, but secretly building the.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Feel like these are, like, ready-made.
I don't know. Like, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because then, of course, down the line, when those robots decide to turn on them, they'll be sorry they built those robots. But for now, the robots are helping
Pacific
them.
Rim 2.
Pacific Rim 2. Skynet.
Yeah. The Atlantic Rim. Yeah.
You know, you got to worry. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. I mean, even though I'm looking forward to Superman, even though some people seem to have mixed opinions about it, but I think Wolverine's going to be horrible, but I'm going to watch it anyways.
I don't think it'll be horrible. Well, I mean, I don't know.
The trailer just looked really. I was like, I didn't even know they were making it. Then all of a sudden, there's a trailer, and I was just like, really? They're really. Not publicizing it much, so I was like, kind of like, oh, they must know it's not very good.
They will be, though. Like,
okay.
But yeah, there's some stuff that I'm looking forward to. I mean, you know, so should be interesting.
But no Wonder Woman movie. All of these superhero movies, and no,
but it's a woman.
No Wonder Woman.
Apparently,
we'll lock up the screenplay and start shopping.
Apparently, I need to write it since nobody else is. Well, you know, they're trying to maybe make a TV show. They tried already, and it was horrible. They had David E. Kelly producing it, so it was like, you know, she was crying in her ice cream at night. But then.
That's not how I imagined one.
No, it was a little bit, it was not working out so well. So then they scrapped that pilot. It was going to be on NBC. And now the CW is maybe going to develop a young Wonder Woman show.
Oh, God.
Called Amazon.
Like a Smallville kind of thing.
Kind of like a Smallville type thing.
Are they going to drag that out for like.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like how.
When they should stop it. And then she actually never becomes Wonder Woman.
Yeah, except they can't
I feel like they can't
do that with Wonder Woman, because Wonder Woman's always Wonder Woman, because she doesn't, it's not like she's like adopted by some Kansas corn-fed people. She's like grows up. She's Wonder Woman's different than Clark Kent. Like, she's always a superhero, you know, like.
I'm venting my frustration about Smallville.
I know. Well, yeah, there's plenty of material for that. There's plenty to do with that, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And then I would also like to see, like with the X-Men movies, there are so many characters in the X-Men that could get their own movie that are women that they haven't.
Oh, they hit the jackpot with X-Men, because it's like when they realized, oh my God, we can do like an origin story movie for all of these.
Every single character can get all their own movies.
Yeah. The studios saw like dollar signs. It was like in cartoons when people's eyes turn into dollar signs.
Yeah.
Yep.
It had a little cha-ching sound. Like, that's exactly what happened there.
Yes, yes. And on the good note, Joss has confirmed that Scarlet Witch is going to come up in Avengers 2. So we're going to get a new female superhero in the next Avengers movie. And I know a little bit about the Scarlet Witch, but not a lot. But
more than I do.
But yeah, I've read some stuff about her, and so that will be interesting. The Scarlet Witch. I think she has a twin or a brother who is also going to come up. Quicksilver.
Green Lizard. Oh.
Yeah, but the Scarlet Witch, and so that will be cool. So it won't be just poor Scarlett Johansson all by herself as the only woman in the movie. There'll be another lady.
Well, that's good. Yeah. I mean, I think we're all also looking forward to the Joss Whedon Much Ado About Nothing.
Oh, yeah.
That's really all I care about. I don't know when I can see it. It's very upsetting. I'm trying not to think about it too much just because it's upsetting that I can't watch it. And so like whenever there's all these like, they premiered it in Seattle. They premiered it in LA, or they're going to in this next coming week. They premiered it in Toronto. They premiered it at the Austin, the South by Southwest. And it's just very upsetting because there's all these people in the country who have seen it and not me. I haven't seen it. It's very upsetting. And so,
and you are the biggest Joss Whedon fan in America, at least. So
it's just like, how long do I have to wait?
Can't believe you didn't get an invite. But yeah,
I mean, it's like, ugh. It's very upsetting. So,
well, anyways, when it's released around here, I'll go see it.
I'm very excited. Yes, it's gonna. I think it's the perfect combination. It's the perfect Shakespearean material, I think, for Joss's talents, and also for the talents of Amy Acker and Alexis Denisoff. So I'm very excited to see that.
Yeah,
and actually, next week I am going to be going to a television festival in Austin. It's called the ATX Television Festival. It's the second year they've had it, and it's like a weekend, and it's like all panels about television. It's just a television celebration.
How will you manage to survive?
I'm like gonna just dance around in circles with excitement all day. I'll just be like, oh, I'm at a television festival.
Don't forget to like
I'll just be like this crazy person in the corner, like shaking with happiness that I'm at a place that's all about TV. So they're gonna have a My So-Called Life reunion. So I'm gonna pretty much die.
Well, I mean, because Comic Con is totally inferior because it's not in completely devoted to TV.
Yeah, Comic Con also has this thing about movies and comic books. They don't understand that it's really all about television.
Yeah, clearly.
No, I do like other things besides TV, as referenced by today's podcast. We're talking about movies. But yeah, so I'm excited about that. It's going to be a Friday Night Lights panel too. I don't think either of you have seen Friday Night Lights. So
no.
You understand nothing.
Apparently.
But Austin is where they filmed Friday Night Lights. So.
Well, then there you go.
I'll be like visiting the Mecca of where Friday Night Lights came from.
Yeah. Well, okay. That'll be exciting for you.
You guys are so like, crazy.
If you make it back from Texas. Then,
I know. It's like, maybe I just won't come back. Yeah. So, I'm going to sign off the podcast real quick and thank you guys so much for recording with me and discussing these movies, and hopefully we can do it again soon. And if any, listeners have any feedback, they can email heroinetv@gmail.com. And any final thoughts, guys?
No, I think we went over and over some stuff. So,
thanks again, and talk to you soon.
God, we're hot chicks with superpowers.
Thanks, yeah, Jeff.
Comforting.
Mm-hmm.